And that was the most insane drive from the airport ever, like, because there's no road rules. Like, it's insane. There's like chickens in baskets on the back of like mopeds. There's little tuk-tuk things with like 12 kids hanging out. There's a guy on his phone riding some of them. There's 20 motorbikes around him, and the cars are all just like, I mean, they're beeping all the time at each other. Right? We can't hear you, Mark, no. And then I went for a walk yesterday because I just needed to try and stop the jet lag. And that was a, I shouldn't have gone for a walk, really. there's no pavements, right? So there's that. And there was a bit where it was really nice. It was like whole kids playing sports, but this guy had told me, oh, there's a market. And it wasn't a market. It was some random street food thing. Oh, it's a nightmare. It was on like a. I'll try to send you guys a picture, but basically, I sent it to my wife, and she was like, don't ever leave the hotel again. Oh, you can hear you now, Mark.
Hey, that's it's Mark. We can hardly hear you, my friend. Mark, we can hardly hear you at all.
Is that any better?
Much
Probably
better.
not.
No, that's much
Yeah?
better. Yeah.
Okay. I haven't actually worked out which side of the headphones my speakers are in. But never mind.
Well, that's the right way around. You need to put a sticker on it.
Excellent. I'll put a sticker on it. Yeah, simpletons like me need things like that. This is the most international podcast we've ever done.
I'm so excited by it. I mean, and I know you've got to get on a plane shortly, so we should probably try and kick off. In this week, on the 24th of August, 1991, goals from Robbie Earl, the Duke, and John Fashnew ensured the Dons beat West Ham 2-0, as always, at their new home in SC25. With the scope at Sellers Park, boo, to become one of the major powers in football, especially with the advent of the likely Super League. Owner Sam Haman, boo, said, "We have constantly surprised people season after season, and I think it's time people started expecting Wimbledon to be successful. We have some top quality players, and the club will continue to do well." Well, that's something we can agree on. The club continues to do well. We continue to grow. We're the same old Wobbles. We're back.
I've been standing here since many years ago. You've been under my skin for as long as I have known. We traveled away and we stand in the rain and the cold. Take the rough with the smooth. If we win or we lose, we just go on.
Hello, dear listener, and welcome to the podcast. Thank you very much for tuning in. This is an exciting podcast for me. Because I am joined today by our regulars, well, three of our regulars, two of our regulars, Doctor, in, where are you, Delhi, Adam Proctor.
Yes, I am.
How are you doing, Adam?
I'm good. I'm in India. It is the most insane place I've ever been into my life. And so, yeah, I'm here for work, and somehow my hotel Wi-Fi is working well enough. So, yeah, it's good, but it's mad. It's mad.
This is crazy. And joining us from an airport in Dublin, about to jump on his flight, it's the voice of the opposition podcast. It's Tall Mark Lewis. Hey, mate, how you doing?
Good evening from a very warm and sunny Dublin. It's not as glamorous as Delhi or New Delhi or even Old Delhi, whichever Delhi Adam's in. But no, doing all right, actually. Yeah, just a quick flying work trip and jumping on a plane shortly.
Yeah, well, still more glamorous than downtown Chislehurst. But here we all are, and the league has kicked off with obviously the first game wasn't that
no
great.
Goals.
The first home game. I mean, I guess we celebrate the fact that we didn't concede any goals. Mark, was that a good thing?
In comparison to how things were at Huddersfield, yes, we definitely do. Frankly. Because Huddersfield, we didn't look like a football team. let alone anyone who had an understanding of how to actually score goals at the professional level. On Saturday, we did on occasions. I wouldn't put it more than that. Apparently, we had, like, I don't know, the fourth lowest XG, but who gives a fuck about XG, frankly?
What is XG?
The likelihood of how many goals we'd score, as far as I understand it, anyway.
Yeah, expected goals with an X.
Exactly. In other words, if you play defensive football and play loads of long balls, I mean, I found a stat today that, like, we played 27% of our passes were long balls or something. And that was the third highest in the whole of League One. So? And? So what? You're telling me if we won 3-0 that anyone would have actually been bothered by that?
Yeah, indeed.
So, Mr. Adams, did you miss the game of Saturday complete?
Yes, I was. Yeah, I was on the. I was travelling to the. I was in the airport basically during the whole of the match. I was hoping I could listen. I thought I might be able to listen to it on that on the radio station that we've now got a deal with as well. But you can only do that if you have a DAB radio. You can't do it online, which I guess makes sense because you'd want to probably listen to our commentary if you're online only. So I sort of half thought I might be able to listen to it, but I didn't in the end because I was also going through security and all that.
Yeah, the whole. So, yeah, it's a weird scenario when you're going on a trip like that, where, like, I mean, I've been in the airport here in Dublin for a couple of hours, and you forget what time it is, and you forget what time of day it is, and you don't really have any kind of frame of reference to anything. The one thing I can remember was the Staines game. For some reason, I catastrophically badly organised my life, and I ended up during the Staines game flying to Houston, Texas for work. And this was the early days of the internet, so I literally had to try and find some kind of internet cafe next to the hotel I was staying in Texas to be able to get a result. I started screaming and shouting when I found out that we won. Which, of course, nobody in Houston understood anything whatsoever. I suppose it was less exciting to find out we'd drawn 0-0.
Yeah, my dad texted me. He went with my brother and just said, you didn't really miss anything. Neither team did much. I was like, okay, fine. So, yeah, it was a bit odd. Oh. The thing that's cracking up now is I think Matthews, who should in theory have the best internet ever, is like not online. It's disappeared.
Adam is in a hotel in New Delhi. I'm in a Burger King in Dublin Airport. Matt's at home in Chislehurst in Kent. And he's the one that's having internet issues. Dear listener, this may be part one of however many parts of this week's episode of Same Old Normals. What I can tell you is we kept a clean sheet. And we had a different goalkeeper. What was your take on the different goalkeeper?
Well, I mean, I wasn't there, but maybe Matthew's now returned.
Might be able to tell us. It's hilarious. What I think is brilliant is that you're in Delhi and you're in Dublin, and here I am at home on my own computer, and I'm the one that's crashed. It's fantastic.
Oh. And just for Matthew's benefit, the listeners already heard that little summary we made about a minute ago. Never mind. Yep. We were just asking that. McDonnell or Bishop in goal?
It's a really tricky one, isn't it? But I think... I thought Bishop was clearly man of the match for our first game against Newport, but it was so poor against Huddersfield. I think people were so, you know, it was such a bad performance that there was nothing he could do, so he had to drop him. And McDonald played all right against Orient, and I thought he played well. I mean, there was nothing particularly wrong. He doesn't look outstanding to me, and I think there are some times that Bishop can be on his day. I think he can be great. And I think he could be a lot more quicker. He's got that sort of like head to get things going a little bit quicker. But it feels like there's something wrong. And we might never know what that is. But it feels to me like there is an issue somewhere.
It's a curious one
for
me.
I haven't seen any of the highlights. But go on, sorry, Mark.
No, you carry on.
I was just saying, I haven't seen any of the highlights. But I wonder if Bishop is still carrying some sort of injury. And that they're just like... being as careful as possible so that, you know, he's not out for longer than expected.
Well, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it appears that Jackson did genuinely drop him at the end of last season, as opposed to he was injured. He seems to have admitted that in sort of the bleak way that some of the interviews are. But the curious thing normally is that you normally start the season, obviously, as we know, this season you start the season with the League Cup, but normally you start the season and then the League Cup comes on pretty quickly afterwards and you play your second choice keeper in the League Cup. So maybe we've done that. Only we started the season with the League Cup and therefore we started the season with our second choice goalkeeper, so to speak. The thing is, McDonald seems to inspire confidence in the players, because there was a lot of bitching, frankly, sadly, between the defenders and the keeper at Huddersfield after the first two goals. But the crowd, I don't know, are necessarily... The crowd, I thought, again, were absolutely top-notch on Saturday. Getting around the team first time of the season, and obviously a lot of people have seen each other for the first time over the summer. But they don't necessarily have so much confidence, as much confidence in McDonald. In fact, it would appear that they don't really have a huge amount of confidence in either two goalkeepers. But if we know we want to strengthen somewhere, with the things we discussed in previous weeks, it wasn't in goal necessarily.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot of chatter at the moment about changing keepers and what that would look like. So would it potentially be, because I can only see the way that it works is that we potentially get a loan in and then we loan out one of our keepers, Modolla Bishop, because we can't carry those, or we couldn't carry three keepers like that. You'd have to loan someone out. So I think that would be the only way it would work. And whether in actual fact it would be better for Bishop to have a loan, you know, to get his confidence up and to play at a certain level on a week in, week out basis might be a good thing. The only other thing is that I think that the way we're now looking, it feels like we're doing, you know, 3-year contracts with the hope that you sell a player in year two, at the end of their year two. And Bishop would be coming up to the end of his year two in the summer of next year. So, you know, I guess that's when you'd be ideally looking to sell him. And the hope would be that he's, you know, got to a certain standard by then. So I don't know. And equally, I mean, it's a weird thing about how we're treating goalkeepers these days. So, you know, is it important for us to have a permanent goalkeeper? Is that really important? Or in actual fact, where we've been successful over the last few seasons is actually having, you know, keepers on loan. So is that a better system for us to have? I mean, Adam, I don't know what you think. Is it important for us to have our own keeper?
Well, I think when we were having lots of loan keepers, I was definitely wanting to have our own keeper. But we do know that Bezo does some great things with loan keepers. So there's clearly something going on there. I don't know whether that magic has worn off with Bishop, but I would rather have a permanent keeper throughout a season, generally. But I hear what you're saying. I just know that I complained that we were always struggling with keepers before and having to always loan them, and that was painful. So,
I mean, I believe Owen Goodman's the only one that we've actually kept all season. And there were a lot of loanees that were mainly strikers, you know, go back to like Matt Tubbs and Michael Smith and so on, Michael Force as well. We kept these players for... We wanted to keep them all season, but we ended up only keeping them for half season. They were very successful all seasons, but then we lost them, as they say, never fall in love with a lone player.
Yeah. And again, this is another interesting thing, bringing us on to lone players more generally, is that, again, that we seem to have moved away from that. So the only lone player I think we've got at the moment is Harrison. Is that right? I don't think we've got any other players on loan. So we can use the loan market. I think we're allowed to have up to 5 players on loan. But it does make us susceptible for that December, January angst, which we didn't have last year for the first time. So, you know, is that a good thing? You know, should we actually be making more of the loan market?
Well, categorically, we have to, because A, it's cheaper, and B, it's today is the 24th of August, I believe, as we're recording this one. So we've got literally a week or so left of the transfer window, which I think finishes some point on Tuesday, the 1st of September. How many players are we really going to get in now that are not loan players? And even if we are getting loan players in, are they going to be, for the sake of argument, Charlton loan players? I'm not talking about Cannon, because Cannon apparently is on his way to Reading, if not somewhere else. But certain teams have obviously, having started the season, played 2 or 3 games, including League Cup games, set the stall out already to say certain players are in my squad and certain players are not in my squad. And if you're not in the squad, like Jake Greaves, then the opportunity crops up. I think I said last week, actually, I think it was, we recorded last week before Reeves' loan was confirmed. I'm surprised he's gone to someone like Barnet from a location point of view, from a travel point of view. But he's gone straight in and he's obviously made an impact straight away, scored on his debut. It does appear that that basically is us saying goodbye to him, because there was a very heartfelt note from the club and a very heartfelt note from him as well. And he has therefore been able to go out with a legendary status that I think I mentioned previously that we'd like him to.
Yep, yep. And I agree. I think he was, it was just, it was being announced as we were doing our pod last week. I mean, there is a recall option, which has been talked about. But it feels from the both the message we put out of the club and the wonderful message he put out on socials that that would seem incredibly unlikely. So I doubt he'll be coming back. But it's clear we need to. It's the same issues we're facing. You know, we need a striker. We need a defender.
I quite like this, because if we get a load of loans in now, not only will we have loan anxiety in January, we'll also have injury anxiety in January. So we'll double down on our anxiety.
I mean, already... Sorry, Bob.
I was going to say, there's lots of things we can get anxious about as football fans. By definition, we're anxious every single week about what happens on pitch between 3 and 10 to 5. But actually, who knows where we'll be with regards to investment, with regards to money that therefore is put into club, and therefore does they get put into the transfer budget, yeah, or the overall playing budget, meaning is the playing budget in January, and this is all complete speculation. I have absolutely no knowledge about this, unlike other podcasts that I've foolishly listened to recently. Have no idea whether or not we're going to have a bigger budget to play with, and we want to make sure we're still competitive in the league if we do have that bigger budget to play with come January 1st.
There is a kind of excitement around the ground in terms of what potentially might happen here with regards to investment, and I feel that we might know more in September, which is unfortunate in a way, because you know we could do with the money now, but the thing about it is, which I'm quite interested in, is I believed that at some point the club might come to us, or the DTB might come to us with a series of options for us to vote on. You know, like, so there might be, so my thought would be that it might be three investors who are coming to us, and they would lay out their proposals, and you know, there'd possibly be, you know, some video content from them, and we could look at that, and then the DTB members could vote on their preferred investor. My concern is that it might be that the DTB do all that due diligence and come to us with one option, of which we take.
I think that's what's going to happen. I think that if they're doing all the fit and proper tests and stuff now in advance of that, which is probably a good idea because we want to know that they are someone we could back, I think they're going to probably come to us with one investor, that could be multiple people, with the package and explain why they're a fit and proper person to invest in the club, and that probably suggests that we should vote in favour of that process. And hopefully they'll outline in detail the process they've gone through, because that's what we want to be able to trust. I'd be surprised if there's more than one investor that's presented to us, to be honest, because that could split the vote in ways that would be a nightmare.
So two bits I can add to this. One is, and I've never been involved in any type of financial engagement or takeovers or negotiations like that at all in any shape or form. However, my general understanding, when you are looking to either acquire a company or part of a company, which obviously we are in this case, is you, the person who's putting the finances in, actually want to be able to have exclusivity over the for a certain fixed time period so that you don't run the risk of losing all of the opportunity for your investment. In that regard, I agree with Matt completely that it would be nice to have multiple options. However, that's almost certainly not going to happen because, again, I'd be very surprised if whoever it may be hasn't asked for exclusivity. Because also, if we are then with whoever we've got advising us on this particular opportunity, we need them and the Doncaster board and PLC who are making all these decisions and having these discussions to have the time to be able to consider and review and get the fit and proper testing done that Adam mentioned. If we were doing that with two groups or three groups or however many groups, that's going to be that much more complicated. And you're right, Matt, we need the decision made so that the process can actually kick in, so that therefore, and we've seen it with any number of takeovers, but like Sheffield Wednesday, for example, in recent times, these things can take months. And I don't know whether we can financially or from a sporting perspective actually afford genuinely to not have the finances in place for the general transfer window.
Yeah, I mean, I get that. I get that, Mark. And I completely understand. My sense is, though, that I think if that is the case, if that's what's happening, if there's only going to be one investor, I would suggest that the club clarify that. Because I believe that I thought I heard a while ago that we would be voting on a potentially preferred bidder, so that there might be three options, you know, two or three options available to the members, and we would vote on our preferred option. Because I think that there's going to be a lot of caveats in what an investor brings that we as the fans will not see, and they might be, for some of us, you know, potentially red lines. So, for example, if an investor comes in and they are saying that in however many years' time they would want more investment in the club, you know, so like to go over that 50%, if that is something that they are looking to do long term, that might be a red line for a few supporters. But if that's the investor that's being presented to us, that's kind of a weird one. So we need. I think it'd be useful to know from the DTB what they're going to present us with. Are they just going to present us with one option, which is fine, because, you know, as you say, Mark, it's about exclusivity and whatever it is. And what are the red lines that we're saying to that investor that we're not going to cross, i.e. we won't go less than 50.01. I think those things need to be talked about.
Yeah, I think if you listen back to the anniversary podcast we did the other day with Mark Jones and Joe Tolbert and Alex Kirk, obviously Noel's on as well with regards to yellow and blue. Now, Mark didn't, because he understandably didn't want to, and it wasn't appropriate for that particular podcast, talk about a particular activity with regards to investors or naming names and so on. But obviously, he is an employee of the club. So in that regard, he was talking about overall opportunities for people to invest, but he was also very much still espousing the fan and club. And my understanding, both from the discussions that I've had privately with one or two Doncaster people I know, just support people I know, and also with what they've said publicly in meetings, is the Doncaster Board and PLC board, have gone into every single discussion with potential investors, starting from the premise of we all remain fan owned. And if you're not on board with that, thank you very much, but we're not the kind of person you want to deal with. Oh, sorry, yep. You're not the kind of person we want to deal with. Yep. So you would like to think that whatever their end goal may be, that is definitely something that they are on board with. And you would also like to hope that they've already been to Plough Lane, they've seen how things are, they've seen the setup on the match day, that can look glamorous, but also just generally the way in which fans and supporters interact and so on. I have been told that the Doncaster board do want to get involved publicly by coming on us as a podcast and coming on the other podcasts as well in the early part of September, so that's going to be in the coming weeks, to explain what's going to be going on, what particular votes need to be done, and so on and so forth, as they did with 50+1, the actual vote itself. And if they're going to do that, then this is the kind of question we should definitely ask them. And obviously, then they're not necessarily going to be able to tell us everything we need. But equally, there will be fans who understandably, justifiably, will not vote at all on something unless they feel they've got the appropriate information.
Excellent. And Mark, it's slightly distracting. I hope the listeners aren't finding distracting, but there seems to be some small child being tortured near you. Is that what's happening? Because it does. There's something going on in that.
It's like Mark has moved into the kids' zone.
He's in the ball pit.
Are you safe?
I'm in the Burger King. I'm standing still. I'm in the Burger King, and there's lots of people coming backwards and forwards in the background. I've got noise cancelling headphones on, so I can't really hear.
So, dear listener, put your noise cancelling headphones on to listen to our podcast this week. It was great listening back on the, because I couldn't make the yellow and blue special the other day, but I was slightly upset that there wasn't more of a reflection on what I can describe as one of the seminal cartoons of the era, the Wimbles. If people could look through the yellow and blue, old yellow and blue programs, you'll see that amazing cartoon. It's actually put together by an artist friend of mine. I would provide him with the scripts, and he would draw the Wimbles, who looked remarkably like another character whose name began with W. How nice.
I can't even slag you off and make it look like it's some kind of 6-year-old then.
Exactly. I don't even know why Yellow and Blue never got sued. Incredible.
Actually, while we're on that, I have seen a couple of comments on social media and some WhatsApp groups and so on that I'm on, where a number of people have made some very nice comments about Yellow and Blue. And as I said, I was only a small part of that particular thing. Niall also put a post on LinkedIn for those people that might have seen that as well.
Put a post up on LinkedIn and on all the socials and whatever it is. He always does that for all of the podcasts, all our podcasts. No, wait a minute.
Yes, indeed. Niall, I am half absent.
Oh, dear me. Golly, Keith.
I want to know from Adam what Adam's doing in India and how on earth he can follow football when he's 5.5 hours ahead.
I can't, basically. The guy came to fix my TV in the hotel, and he put cricket on, obviously.
Of course he did. And it was probably a bang against Australia. Yeah.
It was that game, and there was an India game as well. It was, yeah, he was like, these games are all on. I explained that my dad knows more about cricket than me, but I have no idea how I'm going to follow the next couple of games, just because time zone is not going to work out for the evening game, and I'm not back for the Sunday game. So yeah, Mark, you've got one of my tickets already.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Yeah. I did walk into a bar in New York about 3 months after the playoff game against Plymouth. What's that? 10 years ago now. And the first person I saw was a Plymouth fan. Just started swearing by looking at him. but it's the weirdest concept. When I remember being on holiday in the Caribbean about 20 plus years ago, watching something like the European Euro 2000 Championship final, something bizarre. And none of the West Indians could understand why this pasty white man was staying inside on a gorgeous Caribbean morning because he wanted to watch football when everyone else was Sunday.
Oh, come on. I mean, like, well, you know how it is? When we were younger, I remember being on holiday with Niall in France or whatever, it's sort of in August at the start of the season, and just trying to tune into the World Service. So you try and find reception somewhere to listen to the World Service. The only way to listen to football back in the day was on World Service.
Yeah, dear listener, there's no DAB radio there.
No.
I remember flying in the car right back through Normandy and getting the old 505, Sussex by the Sea, sports report, and it was something like Wimbledon 6, Newport Gamson 0, whichever season that would have been, I'm not sure, but I'm reckoning about 82, 83.
I think that was that 83, 84 might have been. I thought that was my second season sports. So there are so many things to reference here. The first thing is you talked about Plymouth, and you've talked about a 6-0, and of course our women's team on Sunday. They seem to have got off to the most amazing start. I mean, they were unlucky to lose to Bournemouth. And bear in mind, the team got beaten by Bournemouth twice last season, conceding 5 goals in both games. But to play Plymouth and to win by 6 goals, and I know everyone was really anxious about the women's team this season, but something's clicked. But to score 6 goals, and I've seen them. If you can't, get onto YouTube. Have a look at the women's goals, because they are fantastic. We just seemed to control the whole match. It was brilliant.
There were lots of really nice things to like about that, not just obviously the result itself, and practice folks with a new team and a new squad. They've got some really snazzy kits. They've got a snazzy walkout kit with a new sponsor.
Yeah.
And obviously, I've seen quite a few people around actually wearing, I would almost venture to suggest, I've seen more or as many people wearing the new women's kit as I have the black kit, as I have lavender or whatever. Men's kit, our men's hand kit.
Yeah. Now, I heard that someone who bought whichever women's kit they really liked went up to Jonesy to say, I really like the women's kit. Can I have a word with you about the men's kits?
That might have been one of our dear listeners, actually. So, hello, Lee, and thank you for listening. Hopefully, the volumes of this week's episode are not letting you down.
Hey, I'd just like to say it was a very severe experience for me at the ground the other day because I was there and... Usually I sit with, I sit with Adam, but he's in Delhi. I sit with Niall, but he was away at Edinburgh. Alex, you know, he's always up in the director's box, so I'm never surprised that he's not there.
And,
and Martin Drake and his family. So no one there. So I just sat down. I sat down and I was the only one on that row. But I did get to have a lovely chat with, I'd like to say friend of the show. He's never listened to it. He has no idea that we do a podcast. Joe Armstrong. So...
when's he coming on? We want him on as a guest. Come on.
I know. Well, I've asked him, but he said he's, you know, I don't know. I think he likes to keep a low profile. So anyhow, it's quite nice to him. But then before the game, I was able to have a look around and see the new food options. Adam, I think you'll be particularly interested in this. So again, whole selection of new food there. So there was a burger place, a chicken place, and there was some Chinese street food, which I had.
Yeah, my son.
Nice.
Which was good, yeah. So my son's vegetarian, my daughter's vegan, and my son came in with some Chinese street food and said, you have to go and check out the concourse. It's really good. There's loads of wonderful options. And then he described the food court, and I said, that's not the concourse. That's the food court. Yeah. Anyway, he said, definitely the food court is worth checking out. And the coffee queue was very long, but the coffee cart was back, which is going to keep my wife happy in general terms. But I would actually just want to give a quick shout out to whoever is organising the food stuff around the ground, because they've also got vegan hot dogs, which apparently are £6. And I didn't have one, but I'd say £6 overall in terms of what you can pay for food at sporting arenas nowadays is pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, the trouble is, though, Mark, we've got to talk the food situation here. It is expensive. I mean, I think, all the Chinese food was about £13. The burger meal was £13. I think the pizzas are...
The vegetarian stuff are cheaper, Adam.
Yeah, the pizzas, I think they were about that sort of price as well. So all the standard food is around about that amount of money, which is a fair whack, especially if you're buying for a family. So it really is. So my sense is, I get it. So the club have decided that you can't bring food into the ground. Now, my caveat, and I don't think anyone's ever bringing in hot food. People aren't going over to, you know, Greg's and buying all their steak bakes and bringing them in, and they're certainly not coming in. And I'm quoting you here, Stuart Deakins, with a bargain bucket of chicken from KFC. No one's doing that. But what they might do is they might bring a homemade sandwich. Or something from home that they've made at home, you know, just to think, because they want to get in. People want to get in at early into the game. They want to get into the ground about 1 o'clock or so, enjoy the atmosphere, but not feel forced that they have to buy the food, you know. And if they get in there early enough, obviously they can make the use of the happy hour where, you know, drinks are a fiver. So I feel that there needs to be some rollback on this, because I just think it is so expensive. If you're coming in with a family, you're not allowed to bring in some homemade sarnies or Scotch egg or, you know, a cold pie or something like that. Do you know what I mean?
I was going to say with this, I think that's really important. I mean, I haven't read all the details on it. I don't buy into the conspiracy theory. This is all about maximising revenue inside the stadium. So
well,
I'd like to know a bit more about what.
Yeah, I think it is.
But like you say, there might be a thing around allergies. There might be a thing around like bag checks, etc., related to that? Because I don't, like you've just said, I don't think people were bringing in like massive amounts of food to like just because they, yeah, I, you know, it is expensive. Maybe we have to have a cheaper option. Maybe we can have a sandwich like stall or whatever.
But... There needs to be cheaper options, because I think for some people, and this goes on against the whole thing with Wimbledon, is because we're a fan-owned club, which does mean that to survive, and this is where the arguments are going to grow against fan ownership, because we have to subsidise the club in all areas. That means that we are paying probably the most for our home tickets. If I'm out amongst the whole of the League One, we're paying the most for our food. And what we're delivering as a team is a side who are sitting near the bottom of League One, who are going to possibly be involved in another relegation scrap. So that's what we're offering. We're charging people more money across the board, but our team is not. It's not like we're paying for excellence on the pitch, and I think that is going to be a problem going forwards.
Well, then I think maybe that is. If it really is just about maximising profit inside, I think then you need to entice people who would basically spend nothing and just try and whack a sandwich in before they get in there or whatever, to have like a meal deal, a kids like version, you know, like smaller burgers or whatever. Something that's maybe a bit more family orientated, because that's the big thing, isn't it? Whenever I went to football, I'd always take some stuff for Evie, because, you know, there was always some food that she wanted when she was younger. So, you know, maybe they want to do something like that if they really... are not going to let food in at all.
They have said that children's snacks are allowed.
Not oh, okay. Yeah.
I just don't.
But, you make a very sensible point, Matt. And obviously, on the pitch, we want to maximise the investment being given towards whoever we can actually have in the squad. You know, so that we're not necessarily quite so upset about the likes of, I don't know, by Jennings going out on loan, because we can get in a better player in that position overall, and we have the appropriate funds to be able to do so. And we're not going into the last week of transfer window thinking, if Jaden Sorokin breaks down with injury, then we've got nothing really at home.
I mean, it's an interesting one when it comes to the... Yeah, I mean, like, listen, going back, I just think that we need to be really careful. I just think that we need to... We need to see what we're offering our fans, you know, that is affordable. You know, what makes it, because otherwise people are going to get a little bit pissed off, and it does. It is an interesting situation. And as for the transfer policy, do you know what it feels like to me? It genuinely, I've never had this before, but genuinely feels like we are waiting for the last minute. We're going to do deals on that day. On transfer deadline day, that is when we're going to do our deals, because we're going to miss out on all sorts of players. Like Kanu's been talked about from Cheltenham for ages, you know, as a possibility. And I think he's probably even been down to Plough Lane. So, you know, the chances are we're going to miss out on him. And my sense is that we're going to wait to the last minute and see what deals we can possibly get. So we might be able to pick up something amazing simply because we're waiting to that last moment.
Which obviously is risky. But then again, you look at someone like Yeardom, and Yeardom obviously is coming in with all the experience. And if he's fit, and they've had him by the sound of it in the squad training for a couple of weeks to be able to see that, he seemed to make a pretty positive impression. He played half the game at Orient in the West of Tokyo last week. But that is a sensible, viable option. He apparently got a very good option, a very good hand when he was warming up in front of the Reading fans as well, because they really love him, because he gave real quality service to them for many, many years.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a good thing. I mean, I think we realise that we're only going to be able to really pick up players that are going to be exciting prospects or coming towards the end of their careers. That's it. So we're not going to be picking up people who are in their absolute prime, unless we can get them online.
We will have to wait and see.
We will have to wait and see.
Or maybe we delay the recording of next week's podcast until Tuesday evening, until the actual transfer window is closed.
Yeah. Hey, we could do a special, what's it called? A special signing podcast, you know? Deadline Day podcast.
That would be lovely.
Yeah.
Good people of the pod, I'm going to have to love you and leave you, otherwise I'm going to miss my flight. All right. Unfortunately. And my phone's going to run out of battery and I'm going to miss my flight, which is a bad combination. But yeah. thank you very much. Adam, have a safe trip over there. Come home safe, my friend.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're back to Wigan? No, you're not back to Wigan, are you? Yeah.
No, till Sunday night. So Tuesday would be probably good for a podcast.
Sounds good to me. Matt, are you at Fulham?
I'll be there, my friend. I'm in there. I'm looking for, not just am I there, but there's over 4,500 of us there.
Oh, we sold out more blocks today, which is absolutely fantastic. Like, yeah. I'll be in touch with you offline about arrangements for Fulham. So.
All right. Oh, and a
thank you, darlings.
Take care. See you, mate.
You guys carry on. Bye.
Yeah. Yeah, we're not ending the podcast, Adam. I've got there are things I need to say. So it looks like there's almost another 1,000 tickets for the game against Fulham on Thursday, which I'm hoping you'll be able to follow somehow.
Yeah, well, what time is it?
Cricket.
It's going to be like at midnight or something for me, so that ain't going to happen.
You'll be over your jet lag by then. But,
yeah, hopefully.
Knowing what football fans are like, I mean, surely you'll wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning and have to check your phone.
I might.
But that,
yeah,
it's,
no,
it's
I'd be interested about that game.
Yeah, there is about 4,500 of us there, which is going to be brilliant. So we're going to fill out that end.
Yeah, that sounds really great.
It's going to be an exciting match. But I think it was quite interesting on Saturday. So I don't know when you started again supporting Wimbledon, but the 1983 team were there. 82, 83.
Oh, wow.
So,
I was 86, really. But I mean, I was technically from day zero. 86 was the first season that I went to games.
Yeah, so Dave Besson was there, Mick Smith,
nice.
Cage. I mean, it was brilliant. So there's some wonderful interviews there, but that really takes me back. That was the first, I think it was the first proper season that we were following the team.
Nice.
Yeah, 80, I think that was 82, 83. So when we got promoted, so it... Yeah, fantastic memories, and
it's so good that we get all those players back.
Yeah, some of those players went on to carry on to play for us in the first division. But it's really important. I mean, that link I think is fantastic. So, well done again, Whopper for.
Yeah, I don't know how they do it because it's unbelievable. You know, that's a lot of work. I mean, I don't think people can understand how difficult it is to get a bunch of people together in the same space on the same day. That is a lot of work. So I can't imagine how far ahead they're working those schedules.
Listen, Ray Armfield just does amazing work. He really does. Just brilliant. And I think we've now got one of the largest old players associations. So it's fantastic.
No, it's mega.
Southend are one of the biggest. But then it's us.
I did an alumni event where I wanted to get together alumni because we were celebrating 10 years of graduates. It took me a year to organise that event in between other stuff, and I still didn't get everyone to turn up, you know. So, yeah, it's unbelievable that you get those people from decades of Wimbledon service and they come, and it's great. Yeah, and they interact with the fans and they do the stuff up in the lounge and whatever.
Yep. And there's such a recognition. I just think it's fantastic. So it's great. And every week there's more players there. So, you know, that's another reason why it's worthwhile getting down to Plough Lane. But I am interested in this whole, you know, what is the next steps? It'll be interesting to know when the DTB start to talk about the investment, because there's hubbub going around.
I bet there is.
You know, and I think there's also... and the bonds are going up a bit. I think they've almost reached half a million. But and I think that's why, you know, there is this real keenness to push through this investment. And maybe it's the reason why you know, people aren't making such a noise about the bonds. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, it's not like you hear every day. No. It's not like you get on socials, you know. If you made a pledge, please put that money in. It just feels like that isn't the communication which is going on. And I think that, oddly, that might be another thing that that, you know, the DTB could be doing possibly is like shouting about that, but maybe there's a reason they're not shouting about it. I still think it's worthwhile getting that investment in.
They did that. I agree. They did that special podcast, but maybe they feel that they've done their shout on it and they're going back to the investors saying, look, this is probably what we're going to have in that bucket. So let's work with that rather than waiting any longer to see if it will go anywhere near the original pledging, I would be my guess.
Yeah. I just interesting that there's not a huge amount of noise coming out about the bonds at the moment. Oh, and it's over hard. As we record this, it's £519,500. And I believe that we're looking for a minimum of, I think it's either 1.3 or 1.7. Yeah. Would help. So, you know, again, if people are listening, get involved. And I think probably the DTB need to do a bit, because if there is this hubbub going on around investment, we just say, well, it's not sure. But what we do know is if you put money into the Palau Lane bond, that is definite. That will help us. So you can't forget that.
No, true. I mean, it's always been open, hasn't it? So there are options. But yeah. I mean, it's to how many, again, all these things take so much time. And so, again, I suspect that Don's just bored the PLC are trying to maximise the time on the various numerous activities they have to do, you know, as volunteers, etc. And yeah, so
yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting also what happens with, because the elections are coming up soon as well.
Yes.
So, you know, and we're not sure how many people from the current board are still standing, so we don't know exactly how many places are going to be up for grabs. But Adam, there's a place with your name on it, mate. That's my sense.
Oh, I don't think so. There's definitely. I think I prefer talking on the podcast and letting them listen to us. Letting those people listen to us.
I mean, I think, you know, it's going to be interesting because it is almost that time again, and I think there needs to be, you know, slight difference about how we do these elections. My sense is, you know, again, there needs to be anyone who wants to stand. I think this happened last year, and this is one of the good things that I think they need to do again this year, which is there needs to be, you know, a question and answer session with the DTB. So anyone who wants to stand can go in and ask questions of the DTB. And have that sort of one-to-one session so they get to know what is expected of them. I think to have that information before you apply, I think is a really good thing. I think there needs to be some rigorous looking about how you ensure that there is that all fans are represented, I think is important, because at the moment there is brilliant people doing the work, but they're of a certain demographic, and they admit that, you know, there is an admission, but you need to look at how can we get young people's voices in there, how can we get other people from other backgrounds, how we can get their voices in there as well. So I think we need to really think about how we can do that, and whether that is I think George suggested it, and by the way, George Jones was there. He can't give up on the Dons. He was there on Saturday. You see, we knew he'd come back. But I think there needs to be that. He was talking about a mentoring process, so maybe you look to have a couple of young people who are able to come along to board meetings, but if they can't, then they can talk to one of the DTB members, and they're kind of like our young reps, and so they can get to see what it's like, but they don't have to feel intimidated. They don't have to go to meetings, and if they want to, they could kind of even be anonymous, I guess. But there needs to be a way of doing that and making sure that we have representation, because otherwise, you know, it is going to be a different sort of group, and we need to have something which is dynamic. And also, and Adam, this is going to upset you. I know it's going to upset Niall, but you know, if there are people out there who seriously think that the best option for the club is to sell out, you've got to put your names forward and make the case, you know, and you could get on the and you could get on the board, because I think that there needs to be an open conversation. If you bottle things up, if people feel intimidated by things, then it becomes underground and you get a different, a sort of like a, you know, horrible undercurrent of things. So if people are seriously standing, you know, obviously that's not going to be something that we on the same wobbles want to see happen. But equally, there needs to be space for a dialogue.
Yeah, I don't mind someone standing. They're just not going to get anywhere. It's fine. No, I think one of the things that might be, again, I mean, we're going to talk about this when the elections start to appear and the people coming out. I think what I'd like to see potentially is because we know the time commitment and all the kind of things that has to happen, it does tend to fit a particular type of demographic, right? So I would like to hear from those people who are putting themselves forward how they are actually going to represent the wider fan base, how they might provide mentorship, what are their mechanisms to connecting to a diverse audience, to a younger audience, as members who have time and energy to put into that activity, because it does, as we said before, it skews to certain people who have got a certain lifestyle, whether that's retired, whether they, you know, they're part-time or whatever, they can afford to get to all those things. So I'd love to hear from those people saying, look, I might not look like the diverse fan base that we have, but here's some things I could do where I think I can connect with that diverse fan base and bring those pieces to the trust as an advocate, because you can do that stuff if you are mindful. So I think that could be an exciting way forward, but we'll have to wait and see. There's never a dull moment in a whole season, is there? We're going for bonds, we're going to investment, we're going to games, we're going to elections.
I think always what is the worry is if the team aren't doing well when it comes up to the elections, then that always creates an interesting environment. I think it's the elections is always it's always a tough one, but hopefully we will have that representation and we'll think about different ways that we can get people involved. But there'll be more of that to come later on, dear listener. That'll be another thing that will keep us on our toes. So anyhow, that's it for now. Thank you very much, Dr. Adam Proctor. And a special, I want to say thank you to Sammy Mack, who has produced our new theme tune. We have a new theme tune. I can't even believe that we've got a new theme tune. It's just so exciting that someone has gone out of their way to make us a theme tune. I'm overwhelmed in a way. I just think it's hilarious, but it's great. And we love it. Thank you, Sammy. So enjoy our new theme tune. I hope you've enjoyed our meanderings today. Thank you, Adam. Thank you, Mark. I'm Matt Cooper. We're the same old Wombles. Good night.